It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The second of six police officers to stand trial in the Freddie Gray case, Officer Edward Nero, was acquitted on all charges yesterday. Mr. Gray died a week after suffering a spinal injury in the back of a Baltimore police van while he was handcuffed and shackled but not belted in. The manslaughter case against Officer William Porter ended in a mistrial in December when the jury deadlocked. Prosecutors plan to retry him in September. Yesterday's verdict renews the question of who should be held responsible for Mr. Gray's death. I'm joined now by University of Pittsburgh law professor David Harris. He is the host of the new podcast, Criminal Injustice, which you can find on the WESA website. That's the WESA website. David Harris, it's been a while. Welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
It's good to be with you, Paul.
If you have a comment or question about this case, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH. Again, the number, 412-246-2002. David Harris, were you surprised by yesterday's verdict?
No, Paul, I was not. These cases in Baltimore have always been a lot less easy in the proof than I think people realized from the beginning. Most of us probably remember that Prosecutor Mosby announced these indictments with great power and with a lot of enthusiasm. And it may be that a lot of people got the idea that she thought she had some very strong cases here. We've yet to see that. And I think the evidence in this case was probably even weaker than in the first case where there was a hung verdict, a hung jury on Officer Porter. Here, they really just did not have the evidence, and the judge's verdict showed that.
Before we get into what the judge decided yesterday, looking at the parts of the verdict,
yes,
what is it about the case that led the prosecutors to think that they had a more solid case than apparently they do?
Well, it's not really clear. And a lot of people, I think the answer might even be it was political, that she was out to stop the rioting as much as she was out to bring the case. Now, I don't have any inside knowledge of this. What we do know is that she made the decision to go ahead and prosecute really quickly. And sometimes when a decision is made like that and things have to be sorted out later, you can perhaps cut loose some of the charges or some of the cases that are weaker than others. Here, obviously, we have a set of cases, I should say, in which there was significant public attention that never let up and maybe some political pressure to keep them all going, even though some of them were not particularly strong. And I think that having announced the charges against that whole group of officers, perhaps she did not feel that she could back away from some of them, even when the theories, as in Officer Nero's case and the evidence, were not that strong. So they just went ahead and tried them.
And we oftentimes think of the judge as impervious to outside influences. And yet, in a case like this, the judge who was hearing this case is African-American. How much pressure was brought to bear on him?
I don't know of any direct pressure that was brought to bear on him. I should say that we would hope that any judge would be able to insulate him or herself and his or her thinking to the extent that they could render a fair and impartial verdict without any regard to public pressure. I mean, this is one of the ways in which a system in which judges who are elected might be more susceptible than judges who are appointed. And I don't know what the system is like in Maryland.
I was just about to ask that.
Yeah, I think that some of those judges are in fact elected and some are appointed by the governor. Be that as it may, what we want to know is that all of our judges are capable of standing up against public opinion when that time comes.
All right, let's look at what the judge decided and let you run the four parts of the verdict down.
Sure. There were four charges against Officer Nero. First, assault. Second, misconduct in office. Third, reckless endangerment. And fourth, misconduct in office, but for failing to do something. On the first one, the assault, this was always the shakiest part of the case because what the state was saying was that when Officer Nero participated in the arrest of Freddie Gray, he did so without probable cause. Now, this does happen, and when that happens in the normal course of things, we simply suppress the evidence. But what the state was saying here is not only could they suppress, should the evidence have been suppressed perhaps, but any taking of Mr. Gray into custody, physically putting hands on him in the course of an arrest without probable cause constituted an assault, which is a crime. This is novel to say the least. And the judge here did not buy it. Not only that, the judge said, in fact, the arrest was not accomplished by Officer Nero. It was accomplished by his partner, Officer Miller. So therefore, number two, the misconduct in office, that he corruptly participated in an arrest without probable cause. Well, if he didn't participate in arrest, he can't have participated corruptly. Number three, reckless endangerment. That takes putting somebody in substantial danger of injury or death. And what we saw in cell phone video and in other places was that Officer Nero did help pick Freddie Gray up sort of from the bottom of his body and help place him into the police van, but that another officer was actually kind of controlling the whole thing, lifting him in and so forth. So if anybody had recklessly endangered him, the judge said it was that other officer. It was not Nero. The evidence didn't support that Nero had had any reckless endangerment. And clearly he had not done so intentionally. If anything, he might have been negligent or reckless. Number four, misconduct in office for not doing something. This was for not belting him into the van. And what the judge found there is, A, it wasn't clear at the time that this happened what the rules were about belting him into the van. B, most officers did not obey whatever rules there might have been. But more than that, C, you couldn't even prove, the state could not even prove that Officer Nero was on notice, that he had actually been told that it was his job in a situation like this, where he's not the only officer on the scene, where he's not in charge, and he's not the transport officer to take that step and do the belting in himself. So the judge is basically saying there just isn't any evidence to support these charges, and he found him not guilty on all four.
You mentioned that it wasn't clear about what the rules say for belting in a prisoner. Is that clear now?
Oh, it is clear now, and at some point it became the rule within the Baltimore Police Department.
Which is
they have to belt somebody in those vans. But the thing is, there's evidence in this trial and in Officer Porter's trial, the one that ended in a hung jury, that rule was basically ignored by everybody in the police department and that nothing was ever done about it. So it went on the books at a certain point, but it was never enforced. And in a situation like that, where you add to it that it isn't clear that Officer Nero was even on notice that that rule existed because he was relatively new, he'd only been in the department a couple of years, it is simply the case that you can't find him guilty for failing to do that. We're very, very cautious in our whole American system about finding somebody guilty of a crime for failing to do something. My students will recognize this as the doctrine of omission. And you don't punish somebody willingly for failing to do stuff. We generally punish for doing stuff.
Right.
So if you can't show that he knew he had a duty to do it, you don't punish.
This was a bench trial by a judge only, not a jury trial. It's what Officer Nero chose.
That's right.
Why?
Well, it's the defense option always to have a jury or not. And the reason he chose this is because the points he had to make in his defense case were not narrative points. They were not emotional points. They were legal points. And when your case is made up primarily of legal arguments, and I'm not saying technicalities, you notice, I'm saying real, honest-to-God legal arguments.
You don't want to let a jury get involved, emotions of a jury get involved.
Right. And there are certain kind of cases you do want to put in front of a jury, that you do want to have the jury give you a chance to put a sympathetic case in front of them, but this isn't one of them. It was about rules and about notice and about proving the case in its particulars, in its elements. And in a case like that, the defense obviously thought that he was better off with a judge, and I would have done the same thing.
We have on our list of questions here, why was Officer Nero acquitted? I think we've explained that.
Oh, certainly, yes.
How did the judge reach the conclusion that there was no evidence that the defendant intended for a crime to occur? Have we covered that?
I think so, because if anything, the state's case was that he was negligent. He may have been reckless mm-hmm. in the sense that he failed to do something he knew he should have done or didn't know he should have done, but anybody would have. Those are very different than intentional action.
Okay, which brings us to an audio cut from Billy Murphy reacting to the verdict. We'll explain more about who he is, but first let's listen.
As long as all of the evidence is heard, as long as all of the law is properly considered, and as long as this was a fair process, then justice was done. And to the black citizens in Baltimore, you ought to be proud that such an accomplished jurist with a background in prosecuting corrupt cops had the courage to go against public opinion and render a decision that he and he alone believe was just under the circumstances. You can't ask for more than that, nor should we ask for more than that.
Okay, so who is Billy Murphy, and what's the significance of his statement?
Well, Billy Murphy is a very significant person in Baltimore. He is an extremely prominent, well-thought-of criminal defense attorney in Baltimore, has been for decades. He also is a lawyer who takes on cases against the police in Baltimore regularly, and he is the lawyer for Freddie Gray's family in the civil action that has followed the very tragic death of Mr. Gray. With all of that, being a very prominent member of the bar there, an African-American man, a person who is a spokesman of long standing on issues of police misconduct and so forth in Baltimore, for him to come out and say, look, we have to be satisfied with this verdict. We have to accept it. And the family, when the family says we want justice, what they say is we want a fair process where all the evidence is heard. And Billy Murphy is saying that's what happened here. And we have a judge who also happens to be African American who stood up to public opinion. And if you heard any of the news yesterday, either on NPR or somewhere else, you know, people were upset. They still are. And they
right,
were
there
voicing
were protesters.
That. There, yeah, protesters and so forth. And Billy Murphy is saying, look, this is the system at its best, even if a lot of people didn't get what they wanted. We had a judge take the law, apply it fairly, hear all the evidence, and this is how it came out.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and my guest is Pitt Law Professor David Harris. We're talking about the second verdict in the Freddie Gray case, the second of six police officers to stand trial in that case. Officer Edward Nero acquitted on all charges. We're looking at how the decision was arrived at. And you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email esspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter at ESSPGH, again the number, 412-246-2002. David Weinstein, an attorney from Florida and a former federal civil rights prosecutor who has been following this case, he was quoted by the Associated Press as saying the verdict yesterday will probably serve as a wake-up call for prosecutors whom he said were overreaching. What do you think about that, David?
I think he's right that there was some overreach here. As I said earlier, I think the decision to prosecute all of these police officers probably went too far. I think if there had been time and an atmosphere that had lent itself to consideration and thought, a couple of these cases, they might have let them go. They might not have prosecuted Officer Porter. They might not have gone off after Officer Nero, or maybe even the next one, I think, is Officer Miller, who had more of a role in the arrest, but still was not one of the officers either driving the van or something else. They might have just gone after the officers driving the vans. Now, those cases are going to be tough, too, for an entirely different reason. The state does not seem to have enough evidence of what actually caused Mr. Gray's injury and death. And those cases will be tough because of that. But at least then you're focused on the core of what happened, the death of Freddie Gray. When you're prosecuting people because they arrested, there wasn't probable cause, and that is somehow converted into the crime of assault, that is such a different, much further reach sort of a theory that I think it ends up with weaker cases. And in the heat of the moment, I think the prosecutors simply grabbed more than they could prove, and then they could not or felt that they should not back away. That's the only way I can figure this out, because if I had been sitting in their shoes, even if I had gone ahead with those five initial set of charges, I would have cut a couple of these people loose in the interim.
The prosecutors had no comment because they're under a gag order. Why is that?
Well, the judges in these cases, everybody they've been in front of has said no talking about this. And judges do this from time to time in very high-profile cases, and this is certainly one of them. What they're trying to do is have these cases tried in the courtroom, not in the press or on the street. For those who think that the charges had some political element in bringing them in the first place, having them tried in court is where we ought to be. And so the gag orders are certainly understandable in a case like this. I understand why the judges did it. They want to make sure that the evidence comes out where it's supposed to come out.
Some legal experts say that the judge's ruling was so narrowly tailored that it provides little guidance to what could happen in the upcoming trials.
I think there's something to that. I think that's correct. But that's actually the way that we're supposed to do these things. I mean, when I read that opinion, and I went through it pretty carefully, I thought to myself, this is something I could actually give my students when we study how to prove the elements of a crime. I mean, the judge was that precise, that particular. He focused on this defendant and the case and facts in front of him. And that's what I have to agree with Billy Murphy. That's what we want out of a judge. Every case is different. This case was not tried with the other cases. And the position of Officer Nero is such that his actions are different than even his partner, the other bicycle officer, Officer Miller. His case will be different because he actually made the arrest. So there isn't a lot that's going to tell us what is going to happen with the other cases, though my sense is that Officer Miller, there may be more difficulties for him as a defendant than there was for Officer Nero because he made the arrest.
It almost seems as though, as each of these six defendants, we're one-third of the way through, that as each of the six of them comes through, that there are more serious charges or there's more of a likelihood that someone can be linked to some sort of culpability here.
Yes, that's true, because as we go along, they're trying the smaller cases first, which is sort of unusual in itself. But as we go along, we get closer to the core of what the case is about, Freddie Gray's death. At this point, we have only had people who have had a peripheral involvement in that. Even when we get to the driver of the van, we're going to find that there are, as I said before, some strong, important issues that have to yet be worked out. But as we go along, we're getting closer to what the case actually is. And we don't have these peripheral issues of who made the arrest, at what point, and so forth. We'll be into the thick of it.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris joining us to talk about the verdict yesterday in the Freddie Gray case. The second of six officers, Officer Edward Nero, acquitted on all charges, but there will be more trials to come involving the other four defendants in this case. And David Harris, again, not only a Pitt Law professor, but the star and host of the new podcast, Criminal Injustice, which you can find on the WESA website. David, as always, great thanks.
My pleasure, Paul. Good to be with you.
Coming up, an exit interview with Olga Welsh about her 10 years as dean of Duquesne University's School of Education. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.